Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Kelly Barner, editor at Buyer's Meeting Point. Today, I would like to welcome Joanna Martinez as my guest. Joanna is the principal of Supply Chain Advisors and is an experienced procurement professional. She has led procurement transformation efforts at Johnson & Johnson, Diageo, AllianceBernstein, and Cushman & Wakefield, just to name a few. I recently had the opportunity to hear Joanna speak at ISM New York's annual conference about disruption in procurement, the shift from savings-driven to value-driven. Her message and the stories she shares from her experience bear repeating and should be heard by as wide a procurement audience as possible. Joanna, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. It's great to be here.
So if you would, start us off today just by sharing your view of the journey procurement has gone on, say, over the last few decades, to reach today's moment of pending disruption.
Sure, Kelly. When I was in college, and I'm an engineer by training, I did a stint in a company where I got to know people in various parts of the organization. And in that company, the entire procurement team was in alcohol rehab because they were taking advantage, or for so many years they'd been taking advantage of those famous three martini lunches that we heard so much about. And that was sort of the wrap on procurement for a very long time. And it was not a part of the organization, certainly, that I would ever think of going anywhere near. And then, you know, fast forward into the 90s, and you see a different situation starting to emerge. Companies started to understand that two-thirds or more of the cost of goods was coming from things that were procured on the outside of the organization. You started to see the guys at GE doing reverse auctions. That was pretty interesting and sort of disruptive at the time. And a lot of CPG companies trying new things and getting much more professional, developing different approaches, kind of codifying the best people, sitting down and writing down and codifying the sorts of stuff that they were doing and beginning to teach it to others. So in my opinion, it started to get to be an interesting profession 20, 25 years ago. I certainly saw a disruptive point then. I actually avoided going into procurement because of what I saw, as an intern. And it was only after I started to see, value and a different kind of value coming from the organization that I actually agreed to do a stint in as a management rotation. And I think for years, procurement was able to kind of capitalize on that newfound technology and the newfound way of doing business to go out and approach the supplier community in a different way and have different kinds of conversations with them about, it was no longer, there were ethics in place, I guess I should say, relative to the kinds of ways procurement organizations were conducting business. And as a result of reverse auctions, of RFPs, of e-procurement tools coming into place and stuff, they were able to open up to a wider a group of potential suppliers and really extract a lot of extraneous cost out of the system. And I think that has served procurement well for a long time, but now with procurement organizations that are using technology, where the folks are professionally trained, the kinds of savings that you've seen after multiple rounds of cost reduction efforts have certainly diminished. They're not double digits anymore. Now, for people in manufacturing companies or companies that are doing a lot of acquisitions where there's a constant influx of new demand or new products or new things to buy, That's not so much the case. There still is a lot of dynamism to that organization. But there are lots of other businesses where particularly services businesses, professional companies, that are in sometimes in financial services, other kind of consulting firms, that sort of thing, real estate where I worked in, you don't have quite that level of churn, that level of newness, and you find yourself going to the well year after year to the same kind of supplier group. And so, you can do it a couple of different ways. You can continue to focus on cost alone, in which case it's going to be harder and harder to fulfill those expectations that your CFOs have, or you can start to look at the other ways that procurement can add value. I think procurement are wonderful bridge builders. There's a natural position in a company. If you understand what the revenue generating side of the business or the product creating side of the business are doing and focusing and where their strategies are and where they're having trouble, you can often look outside, you kind of turn around 180 to the supplier community and look to find which suppliers are either meeting that need today or capable of meeting that need if the right linkage is made and they can understand a little bit more. And so it becomes, I think, very exciting because you can take that conversation from focused just on cost reductions to a whole bunch of other things where the use of third parties, comes into play.
Now, you actually told a very interesting story in New York, and if I'm remembering correctly, the context of it was a travel spend manager or a travel procurement category manager. And you were talking about the fact that, like you're saying, the company had actually done a very good job. They had gone back to the well. They had looked at their demands. They had managed efficiencies. And they had gotten to the point where, in fact, there really were no more savings to be achieved. And yet that category manager didn't go to the executives and say, well, I guess we're done. I'll be looking for a job someplace else. Do you mind sharing what he chose to do instead?
Right. And this is a great example of changing the conversation. So, in travel, once you have your employees following the policies that management is interested in putting in place, once you have them flying the airlines and staying in the hotels that you've got the deals with, you start to sort of bottom out the kinds of savings that you can get. There's always a little bit you can tweak here and there, but it's not like those first situations when people are kind of doing their own thing and they're not buying online and they're going to all kinds of different websites or different travel agents. It's not the kind of savings anymore that you get when you start to put those under control. So what he did, this travel manager, was, I thought, very courageous, but a great example of changing the conversation. He went forward 1 year as the strategy for the following few years was being developed, and he said, look, here are the statistics here. We've got people flying the right class of travel. They're using the online booking tool. We've got a good process in place where we've got canceled tickets or points or things like that. We've got a good process in place to reuse them. We're not going to continue to see the kinds of savings I've delivered. However, there's a lot I can do in the area of traveler satisfaction. We have a very awkward expense reimbursement program. We can fix that and make that something much more streamlined, use better technology, and get something that's going to make it easier for the traveler. I'm going to relook at the hotels that I have the deals with and look at the travel patterns and make sure that I've got hotels set up in places that are near where our travelers are traveling. We want to be as close as possible to the places that they're going to our clients. And, because that's something very dynamic, new clients coming on board all the time and that sort of thing, that's something that bears looking at again. And I'm going to work on a safety and security enhancements There are things that we should be doing from the standpoint of understanding where our travelers are, making sure that globally, as the rules in different countries and the laws evolve, we're keeping current and we're doing the best for our travelers. So where there is an emergency, we can quickly identify who's where and how we can help them. And so he took a situation that could have been sort of a negative, right? He was going into a meeting where someone, you know, the finance folks are going to turn to him and say, okay, Rich, what are you going to commit to next year? And he turned that into a very different kind of conversation. He made a success out of that by being proactive and by thinking it through and not just going back to the well and trying to figure out how he was going to squeeze an airline a little more.
And it's such a great example of sort of the subtitle from your discussion, because you talk about changing the perspective from savings-driven to value-driven. And if value is one of those things that's very difficult to come up with a definition for, but if we factor into value what is being received in exchange for the investment being made, it does alter the formula that procurement gets to use when they're assessing their performance. So it's no longer this assumption that we're going to continue buying the same thing we've bought in the past, and procurement is going to somehow magically find a way for us to do it less expensively. It's about saying, maybe we're going to continue to spend the exact same amount. Maybe in some cases we're going to spend a little bit more. But what we receive in return for that money is exponentially greater than we've gotten in the past. Is that sort of the direction that you're generally recommending all procurement teams look for an opportunity to take?
Well, I think, again, it has to do with the evolution and where your particular team might be on that scale. Certainly, if it's a newly formed group in an organization, often it is savings that the company or the hope of savings that compels a company to create a procurement organization in the first place. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's if it's risk mitigation or it's a concern about controls, but often it's because someone is hearing about other companies getting savings and wants to try to do the same thing. So in my opinion, it's a lot about taking the pulse of the organization. Where a team has matured and you're not in a situation where you've had, you know, an acquisition of a business or, you know, new products coming online, I think there are a couple of things that a procurement organization can do. One is to really get embedded with the sales side of the organization, right? Because procurement can often make a difference in the cycle, the speed of getting something new to market. And sometimes that's a product, you know, it's often a tangible good, where procurement has the sort of unique advantage of being able to understand what's going on within the organization and then turn around and look to the outside and the supplier contacts and the people who are outside of the organization and try to make the marriages and the connections to help speed to market the kinds of things that a company itself doesn't have necessarily the capability of putting together, but that there is capability on the supplier side. So that's one focus that the procurement organization, once they're in and established and there are people in place, as they make friends, if you will, with the folks on the revenue side of the business, can often find, you know, opportunities like that. Sometimes it's actually stepping back and questioning what you're buying in the first place and where your resources are. You know, it used to be that in a technology spend, you were buying servers and lots of capital equipment. Well, now you're buying services, and it's an operational spend, not a capital spend, and that takes a very different kind of approach. It means a different thing, you know, in terms of a company's finances You know, sometimes there are restrictions on capital that there aren't on operational spend or vice versa. And so the procurement community has to kind of relearn how that business stream is moving and how things are evolving and create some new skills. You know, printed material used to be a lot of print spend, and now there's, you know, much more is being done online. Well, it means that maybe you no longer have a need for expertise in print, but you do need someone who can put a services agreement together to get, you know, a virtual marketing, you know, a service, an email marketing service or something like that. So, you know, it's part of that kind of keeping pulse on the organization is figuring out where the not just where the business is headed, but where the individual streams are headed and how technology and changes are affecting them, because they may very well affect the skill sets that you need within the organization.
Now, a couple of times you've made reference to procurement either wanting to or needing to change the conversation. When you look at how this actually works out, what does it mean to procurement to try to change the conversation?
Well, you know, I hear procurement professionals, my peers, all the time say, well, you know, I get measured on the percentage of savings, and it has to be real savings. It can't be cost avoidances, and it's measured against the cost of the procurement organization, the total cost, and that ratio is a number that I have to deliver a 8x, a 4x, 10x, whatever that is, you know, multiple on the cost of the organization. So we basically have to pay for ourselves, you know, many times over. And, you know, that's one measurement of the value. And certainly an organization that has always asked for that is going to continue to ask for that. You know, CFOs are very, you know, cost-related. They're very cost-driven, and, you know, they're not going to change overnight. But when I talk about changing the conversation, I mean that as the procurement leaders meet with the other leaders within the company, they start to talk about the other kinds of things that are doing and bring that into the conversation, bring that into the report, bring that in a way that maybe in the beginning it's 90% cost reduction and 10% something else. And then as time goes by, it gets to be a larger and larger percentage of the something else, because you hit on something that's of immense value, you know, in the organization. You know, I'll give you, you know, an example. I was in a company that had massive profit margins, really huge profit margins. And it wasn't pharma. Pharmaceutical has a lot of profit, but it also has a lot of expense. This was one that had a lot of profit and not huge expense. And it became evident that anything we could do to help get new products out faster was going to far outweigh the amount of money we could take out of cost, that the revenue opportunity was so much bigger for the firm. So even though the folks that you know were on the executive team were looking for procurement to manage costs appropriately, we changed the conversation by beginning to include dialogue about the things we could do to enhance speed to market, the things we were doing to enhance speed to market. And then as those products hit you know, the market, the kinds of benefit that it was bringing and the kinds of value it was bringing. So we got to a point where cost was always talked about. Cost management was always a part, but the organization started to understand how very much value there was in making those linkages and putting the brain power within the supplier community to work on the company's problems and the company's goals in terms of products and things. They started to understand that you could sort of multiply the potential buy a lot by engaging the suppliers much earlier on in the process and giving them some of the assignments to help create the new products. I actually got to a point in that firm where I was spending over a third of my time meeting with the management of the supplier community to talk about our company and the kinds of strategies that were in the marketing and sales community and how they might be able to help us. And I was making those relationships. I was making those introductions between then the management community and of the suppliers and the appropriate folks on the company side. That's the kind of thing that I mean when I talk about changing that conversation, because that gets exciting, because just as a CFO is sitting and he's talking and he's hearing about cost reduction, well, he's also hearing about increasing sales. And when they start to understand how procurement can help, in that way, they start to get excited about procurement in a very different way. You don't become just the cost cutters, but you become the people who can help them on the client side.
Now, when everyone was in New York, you actually shared a really great case example about risk. And you talked about the fact that very few companies are doing nearly as much as they need to around risk. Can you speak to that a little bit?
You know, risk is the hardest thing I've dealt with as a CPO, because when you consider that a company has thousands of suppliers, knowing where to draw the line and what questions to ask and where you're going to focus your efforts is always a problem. I saw a study done by the University of Tennessee, Paul Dittman there, did a piece of work and identified that although most companies, had legal or compliance housed risk managers, they tended to be focused on financial risk and on the data security risk, particularly with all of the data security laws in place around the globe. And where they dealt with the outside supplier community, it tended to be in those areas of risk alone. And that the supply chain risk tended to fall to the supply chain managers who were juggling the need to develop new products, the need to reduce costs, the need to help generate revenue. And so as a result, risk wasn't getting the same kind of attention that it was getting in other kinds of risk we're getting in other parts of the organization. And that it was incumbent really upon the supply chain community to both identify, prioritize, and then mitigate the risk. Now, I have seen banks do a wonderful job with really, understanding their suppliers, understanding their suppliers, and really try to get in there and identify and mitigate risks. I actually had someone who was in a B2B business once tell me that he often got requests for information from companies who were doing studies on risk. They were looking at supplier risk. He said he ignored them. And the only people who ever came back were the banks. So the banks, there was some other evidence that the banks and the financial industry took it very seriously, and maybe other industries didn't as well. Someone I worked with, a gentleman named John Widener, worked hard on ways to automate the risk process. John probably came the closest that I've seen in a non-financial environment to getting a really robust risk management process in place. And his belief was that as long as we were juggling, trying to handle the other things I mentioned, driving down costs, increasing revenue, et cetera, and we had to be on the phone trying to understand, our supplier risk, that was always going to fail. It was always going to be the thing that dropped off. So John worked hard to understand what was available, what systems, what reports were out there, you know, what companies were out there who could assess risk, and then go out and he basically put together an accumulation of several different products that automated as much as possible the risk assessment process so that internally we could focus on the ones that looked like they were the largest threat to the organization. We didn't get it all the way. We were certainly not as good as those banks, but came a lot closer than anyone else I had ever seen in terms of trying to wrap his arms around it.
So now we've talked about the changes that procurement has made in terms of formalizing or increasing the level of respect due to the profession. We've talked about the active steps that we can take to change the conversation. And then we've also talked about how we need to not take risk factors for granted. We need to be actively on top of what's going on with risk. And that leads me to think that despite the fact that we are expecting some disruption within procurement, that this isn't a disruption that we are, or at least that we need to be, victims of. So what sorts of opportunities do you think exist for either companies with robust procurement functions or for ambitious procurement professionals to sort of seize this opportunity to take this disruption and turn it into something very positive to get to do something new and different and maybe more value-oriented?
Kelly, I loved the way you talked about we don't need to be victims. Procurement doesn't need to be victims. I just feel like there are too many people out there who say, woe is me. My CFO only wants cost savings, or I have to do cost savings, and they can only be P&L cost savings. And, you know, they accept these very narrow definitions of how they're adding value and don't push the envelope. I think there are lots of ways of pushing that envelope and being proactive and changing that conversation. So one example is that, you know, we have a natural place in the entire purchase-to-pay scheme, right? There we're dealing with suppliers. They're invoicing us. They're getting paid. We get calls when things don't happen, and they're looking for checks or, auto payments. There are things we can be doing as procurement organizations to get involved in that within our companies in a different way and show additional value in terms of cash flow, visibility to the supplier community on where they stand in terms of payments, et cetera. I think that's a place that often has been outsourced in companies, sometimes doesn't quite have the leadership, the supply chain leadership, because you're often dealing with a piece that's out and a piece that's internally, and that procurement organizations, because we own that supplier relationship, we really do have an ownership, organizations don't always see that. So I think that's one place where we can kind of harness that opportunity and change that conversation. Another one is, I think as procurement organizations, we have to think a lot about what we're working on, right? You know, we have this tendency to do these Pareto analyses, and we say, okay, we're going to work on these big spends, and we're just going to keep working our way down here. And at some point in time, you get to little spend areas where you have to question whether it's really worth the human effort and the brain power to go in and be working there. Sometimes I think we have to have the courage to walk away and say, you know what, I'm better served by helping the R&D organization, develop this new product, because we're better off and can go further faster, here. Or I'm better off by doing some re-engineering myself and retraining my folks in these new areas because I understand that technology is moving in a new direction and we don't have anyone who really understands this. There's a lot of things, and I think the organizations that fail are the ones that let themselves be victims. The ones that succeed are the ones that are proactive in enhancing that conversation, right? You don't have to say, okay, well, now next year we're not going to talk about cost. We're going to do this other stuff instead. I don't think organizations are going to accept that, but you can evolve to a point where it's a richer conversation and you accept, you're accepted in the organization by a broader array of business leaders. I can tell you one company that I worked in actually had a very significant spend that we influenced that was actually paid for by the clients. And so we could help, but it actually didn't show up on our books, and so it tended to be ignored, but it was actually a very significant spend. So by showing how we could enhance a client relationship, we got a whole new part of the organization that never would have had any idea what procurement did other than annoy them because we told them to stay only in this hotel or we told them not to fly business class. Instead, they got behind us and would speak. I heard secondhand, would speak at some of the executive team meetings that I wasn't part of about how we were helping enhance the business or the business offerings. That's the kind of thing that you want to see in the organization. You want to have advocates sprinkled around so that even when you're not there, you can feel that you're going to be well represented well beyond just the cost aspect. Kelly, I guess I'd like to wrap by saying that, you know, one size doesn't fit all. So we might go into an organization with an expectation of cutting costs. And because that's what we've been trained to do, that's often where a procurement professional starts. But when I look back onto three organizations where I spent a significant amount of time, what I found were three very different scenarios. In one, the contracts were really bad, but it's the company I talked about earlier where they had such a massive profit margin. Really, the best way to add value quickly was to go in and help them speed to market, help make those linkages with the suppliers, and help get new products out there faster. Now, we went back and we fixed the bad contracts. We went back and we made sure the contracts we put in place were the right ones, but that was the right way to add value to the company, okay? In another one, you know what? The pricing was really bad. We really did need to reduce costs. But one of the reasons we needed to reduce costs had a lot to do with some shareholder and some client discontent because of our costs, that we were able to help that business problem. But there was a good rationale to do it other than just for the sake of reducing costs. And in another company, actually, their processes were bad. They had good costs. Yes, we could make them a little bit better, but it was much better for the firm to be making the processes good and to be focusing on that. And once we got good processes in place and the people were following the processes, that actually got the biggest bang for the buck in that firm. So it isn't one size fits all, and I think it's important that we, who, you know, you love dealing with suppliers, you love coming back, and you love saying, hey, I did this and I had this impact, step back in our companies, understand where the real needs are, understand our own skill sets, and go in and try to use those skills in a way that's really going to help the company.
So what you're really kind of saying, in a way, is that although we're expecting disruption in procurement, there is no sort of one set of priorities for procurement. And so the disruption is sort of a set of external conditions combined with whatever is going on inside any given company. And it's procurement's role to look at opportunities to improve that or to bridge disconnects and to improve the situation given that their own combination of internal and external conditions.
Right, Kelly. I think that procurement can either be the disruptor or the disruptee, right? If you are the disruptor, you are engaging, understanding, making linkages, helping the business process with the contacts and the knowledge and the comfort you have with putting arrangements in place with people on the outside, with providers of goods and services on the outside. Or you can not do that, focused exclusively on cost reduction, and sooner or later be the disruptee. Sooner or later, if you focus very narrowly on that traditional definition of procurement, unless you're in an extremely dynamic, extremely growing organization, you're going to hit a point where it's really going to be hard to justify having that procurement organization in place.
Well, Joanna, thank you so much for sharing all of your insights today. Thank you for sharing so many of your stories and experiences that extend through different roles that you've held during your career. For anyone that is interested, I will be sure to share some information about Joanna Martinez on today's Blog Talk Radio episode page. Thank you, of course, as well to everyone who has joined us for this BMP Radio podcast. Please feel free to share your comments and feedback on this conversation, as well as to share it with anyone from your network that you feel would benefit from the information.